Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This should be fun. Or not.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 6, High Anxiety. And now here are your hosts, Tara Archipelago and Adam Grosswarth.
Hello, Adam Grosswarth. I do know your real name.
Hi.
Listeners of Again With This already know that Sarah's out for a few episodes, so Adam is very graciously sitting in for her, and we're thrilled to have him to talk about high anxiety. But first, we want to tell you what's going on over the Patreon, dropping this Friday, January 23rd. It is Again With This, episode 273. Let's watch Busy Phillips in Stumble. This is NBC's new cheerleading comedy that just premiered last fall, and she is in season one, episode 4, Button Day. It's on Peacock. We'll link it in the show notes, and you can find information on that and so much more, including our ongoing membership campaign at againwiththispodcast.com/club. Adam, are you ready to talk about high anxiety?
I am, but I do want to say I'm not only a guest host, I'm also a patron. And
thank you.
And you're missing out if you're not there. And Dave, thank you for your service on Again With Them. You are a hero, and I appreciate you.
Yes. By the time listeners hear this, Dave will have just finished his sentence covering Again With Them in Sarah's stead. And he is not the same as when he started. I'll just say that. Let's start with our B plot. Jen gets revenge on Charlie. And we open here with Jen on Pacey's sort of boat, ranting to him about Charlie's cheating. She cliches that men should actually act more like dogs since they're going to end up peeing on you anyway. Metaphorically, she adds, although now that I've read Jeffrey Stepakoff's book, he was a producer on the show for many years, I would not be surprised if he tried to submit a script with piss play in it, because he goes on about all the sex stuff they tried to sneak in. My God. You read that book too, right?
I read part of that book and like couldn't do it.
It's bad.
I thought I had read the salient Dawson's chunk. It sounds like I missed some, and I think I'm okay with that.
Well, he comes and goes with it. Like, it's so much of it is about TV history and all of the other shows that he wrote on. It's like, I don't care if you call your book The Billion Dollar Kiss. We should get more of that. And he barely touches on it. Anyway, we'll probably talk about that in a future Patreon episode too. Back to this episode. Jen moves on to blaming herself for Charlie's behavior because of her own naivete. Pacey thought this kind of thing was usually Jack's department, meaning listening to her talk about her feelings. But Jen apparently has not spoken to him in weeks because he's been so busy getting drunk with his frat bros. In which case, Pacey says Jen can get mad, which she already has, or she can get even. And apparently she decides on the latter when we see her like 10 scenes later. Dressed up in full 2001 regalia, she's in like a slinky bias cut skirt and she's got a flower in her hair. She looks like she's stepped straight out of the Delia's catalog. She is knocking on Charlie's door and he opens it a crack and says they were going to rock each other's world tomorrow night. But Jen shoves past him and clip two.
I really got to get one of those Palm Pilot thingies. Keep track of all my liaisons.
Aw, Palm Pilots.
So we're cute. At a point in the show where like all of the tech just makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I'm also watching ER, and I'm like almost at the exact same moment. So I forget which show this was on, but on one of them, there was like a blueberry iBook.
Oh, yeah.
And like I made a little sound. Like I was so delighted.
It was a cute moment in culture.
Yeah.
Jen is visibly surprised to find Charlie's room empty, but she sticks with whatever her plan is, sitting on the bed and suggesting they get naked. Charlie says it's not a good time for him. Jen puts on a performance of heartbreak over his rejection and then says she will go right after she gets her sweater out of his closet. And he tries to stop her by saying it's not there, it's at the dry cleaner. But that's when one of the closet doors opens and the girl that Jen saw Charlie kissing in the last episode comes out. Clip 3.
Who are you?
I'm Charlie's girlfriend. Who are you?
I'm Charlie's girlfriend.
All right.
I realize they're doing a bit, but like in what world would this girl willingly hide in the closet for as long as she's in there?
Yes.
And then come out and be like, what's happening?
Uh-huh.
Or, because I actually thought it might be a bathroom because Joey and Audrey have a private bathroom as freshmen somehow. That would make more sense, except then the sweater wouldn't be in the bathroom. So it doesn't, yeah.
Yes, it's all nonsense. Whatever they're trying to do with a misdirect is not really misdirecting.
Yeah, except Charlie's an idiot, so he buys.
Some amount of time later, Jen and Nora, which is the other woman's name, are confronting Charlie together. Hearing the phrase, have your cake and eat it too, makes him horny, hardy har. And he points out that it's college. He didn't explicitly make a commitment to either one of them. He met them both at the same party and was just seeing where things went, which honestly, fair, except the way you can tell he knows what he was doing is shady is that until 5 minutes ago, he was trying to hide it. But that aside, he is basically being reasonable until he says, even though his one-on-one relationship with each girl is over, there could be a way forward for them. Clip 4.
I mean, look at the facts. All right. I like you. And I like you. And once upon a time, you both like me. All right. So I propose. Tell me if I'm crazy here. That we all like each other at the same time.
Okay, not to be the person who says throw everyone one, because that's not the solution to every problem, but they are all hot. Like, give it a shot. It's college.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. And so when we return to Charlie's room, the girls are into a threesome, air quotes, but they tell him he has to strip for them first. And he pulls off his shirt and he does it in the sexy where he pulls it from the back of his collar over so you can really see his arms, the way every sexy guy in a movie always does it. And then he closes with the first of what I'm going to call fuckboy hand rubs, where he's just sort of like up really close to his mouth and looks like he's in a hip hop video or something.
He's like, oh, I'm so cold. I'm so cold with my shirt off.
Well, it's partly that, but partly like, here we go, like rubbing your hands with anticipation or something. It's both. And so when he balks at taking off his pants, Jen puts a hand on Nora's thigh to spur him on. And so when he's finally fully naked, having tossed his boxers into the terrarium that is housing his literal lizard, which I feel pretty sure he wouldn't be allowed to have in a dorm. Back me up. No, I never lived in a dorm. Okay. That's what I thought.
I mean, I lived in a much less nice dorm. I did happen to speak to a friend who went to Harvard last night and I was like, what? Was this a thing? And I guess I assumed since Sarah hasn't flagged it earlier that it was a Princeton thing.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently not for freshmen, but like, yeah, the giant room and the bathroom actually sort of realistic. So
damn.
I suppose with a lizard, you could sort of get away with it because it's not like anyone's coming in to clean.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, no, that would not be a thing.
God, no.
It was emotional support lizard.
Well, I was going to say that was not a thing in 2001. So you couldn't even make that argument, probably. So Charlie tells the girls it's their turn to undress. Jen tells him to close his eyes first because they're shy. And then they grab their coats and spin him into the very busy hallway, slamming the door and locking him out of his room. And this is not great, but he had to give it a shot. Also, I'm sure he will have no problem finding two more people who want to have a threesome with him, particularly after they've seen his crank in the hallway, because all of this has been the work of a guy who's got BDE, in my opinion.
Yeah, actually, the least plausible thing about this to me was the fact that he would feel any shame.
Right.
Like, that, you know, because when he's out in the hall, he's like, oh, no, don't look at me. I can't believe you locked me out of my room. Like, no, not this guy.
No. And also, like, everyone's probably seen everything except for what his boxers would cover anyway. Like, it's a dorm.
Yeah, it's a dorm.
I'm sure he's been walking to the bathroom without clothes on. Anyway, Outside afterwards, the girls giggle as they confirm what we had already figured out. They planned this whole thing. Clip 5.
Can you believe that he thought that he could actually talk us into a threesome? I mean, no offense, you're really beautiful. It's just not my scene.
None taken. And you too, beautiful. Very much so.
Yeah. Was she having a stroke? What is that line? This is a tease, but if anyone in this cast were going to experiment with same-sex attraction in college, it would obviously be Jen. Like, I'm kind 100%. Of surprised this didn't actually happen, like, just for the story.
Yeah. I assume we never see her again?
No, she comes back. Nora, okay, she's good. Back. So then they continue to gloat. Jen took Charlie's autographed copy of Pinkerton on vinyl, which she tosses in the trash. Nora puts his art history notes for Monday's exam on top of that. Jen also still has Charlie's favorite shirt, which she's about to clean her toilet with. And they both blame themselves for thinking they could meet a guy who is cute and honest. And Jen invites Nora to her friend's party, which we'll get to, but Nora's going to go back to her room and try to convince herself it doesn't suck being alone, which Jen admits sounds pretty good. And Nora adds that they should hang out sometime. And as I said, we do see her again. She's got two more after this, not one. And from here, Jen crosses into the A-plot. We will see her there. On to the A-plot. While Dawson seeks help and booze, Audrey gets a visit from her terrible mother. In the cold open, Dawson's at his doctor's office, his PCP, finding out there is not anything physically wrong with him. Doctor No Name obviously wonders why a hardy 18-year-old has sought his help, and Dawson hesitantly tells him about his panic attacks and that he has no idea why they're happening. And the doctor's like, didn't your father just die? So that Dawson can establish that a month has passed in showtime. Dawson doesn't think that's the cause. He feels he's dealing as well as he could. So the doctor points out that the panic attacks could be how he is dealing with it and recommends a therapist in Boston named Weir, calling out to his receptionist to make Dawson an appointment. When Dawson says he has to stay close to his mother, the doctor says the next nearest person is in Providence, which is so rude to Dr. Tom Frost, who's definitely right there in Capeside. Maybe he and his
real weird
poetess moved.
Also, we've established now in the show, and Sarah's been complaining about this for years, but it's actually now canon in the show that they're like an hour away tops.
Yeah.
Like people do that commute for work. You could go to an appointment and come back, which he will eventually do. Like, it's very strange.
It is. But this could also just be him being like, it's too hard, when the actual reason is I don't want
to. For sure. Yeah. It was a nice touch that he's a pediatrician or like a family.
Yeah.
I mean, for real, like that's totally realistic that he would still be seeing in the small town the family doctor. And they don't harp on it, but there's like some stuff on the walls. And I think he calls him buddy at one point. It's just like, oh, yeah, okay, this makes sense.
But it's also a little bit, you know, Dawson is I'm baby, especially about this stuff.
That too.
The doctor promises that Dr. Weir's worth the trip, and then the secretary pops back in and chirps that Dawson has an appointment with Dr. Weir tomorrow at 5, which LOL on behalf of anyone in our timeline who has tried to seek psychological treatment, because from what I hear, it's not that simple and you don't see someone tomorrow ever.
No, not if you want someone in network.
Yeah, that exactly. But Dawson's lingering doubts take us into the opening credits. After which, Joey returns to her dorm room to find Audrey frantically cleaning, something so out of character for her that Joey wonders if she should take Audrey to the health center. Audrey shoots back that Joey making a joke about anything is a sign maybe Audrey should take her to the health center, but this is all about an imminent visit from Audrey's mother. Joey is excited to meet the woman who brought Audrey into the world, but Audrey drops a Mommy Dearest reference. Her mother is a nightmare who systematically destroyed Audrey's self-esteem. When Joey snorts that Audrey doesn't seem like someone who is deficient in that regard, Audrey insists that by tomorrow she'll be a husk of her former self. Her mother is the kind who used to borrow Audrey's clothes and hit on her boyfriends. And I thought that was a nice line, because when we see her, she is exactly what you would expect given that preview. So Joey asks if Dawson is called, and Audrey says she would never forget to tell Joey if he had. And I would like to tell the writers, everyone has cell phones now. Shared phone lines can't really be a plot point anymore, even if you're trying to save your minutes, which was definitely a concern back then. Dawson could just call her directly. And then there's also just a brief moment from the initial boat scene that we already talked about. While Jen is mid-complaint, she finds a silver locket on the bench she's sitting on, but Pacey just says it's a long story and she's too self-involved at that moment to press him about it. So back to Dawson. He's very slowly walking down the stairs at home. And then he notices an empty chair, which is wooden and doesn't look like one he would be used to seeing Mitch hanging out in. And then he gets a little teary. Like, I understand grief works the way it works. Anything can remind you of something. But it's like, shoot him looking at an easy chair or something where you can imagine him like, oh, that's where my dad used to take a nap or something. Like, it's that choice of chair was weird to me.
The whole thing is just so unnecessary, honestly. Like, the parents are already essentially off the show,
yes,
if you want them to be. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to write Mitch out.
Yeah.
And, like, Dawson could easily have a crisis of conscience or a crisis of faith over his internship being terrible and not wanting to live in L.A. and just come home and be that kid. Because he is that kid.
Yes.
And they could have just not killed Mitch and not made us watch any of this. And he could still have panic attacks. Like, that could be...
Yeah.
You could do that without the Mitch part.
Haven't looked, but it's possible we don't see Bessie again for like until the end of season six. Like,
yeah, and we're barely seeing Grams and they live with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is fine. Totally. It's how TV works. Like, this is not a problem.
Right.
And maybe Vanderbeek wanted to play something more emotional, but you know.
Sure. Give me Miami.
I just keep rolling my eyes at all of it.
I know. At the restaurant, the one in Boston, not Gail's restaurant, front of house people are doing little pre-shift tasks while Pacey helps himself to a large bowl of soup, or since it's Boston, probably chowder. Karen flirts that she thought staffers were only allowed to eat the staff meal, but it's Pacey's day off, so technically he's not an employee at the moment. Karen smirks that Pacey just thinks he's entitled to everything he wants in this restaurant. He's like, obviously not everything, as they have flirty smiles. And Danny has been watching this banter, and when Pacey sits down with his bowl, Danny slinks over to give him his paycheck, and Pacey gives him back his wife's locket, which Danny quickly puts away before asking if he can use the boat again sometime, like tonight. He'll give Pacey the night off, but Pacey already has the night off, and he's throwing a party for a friend, which turns out to be Dawson, who, as far as we have seen, has not told anyone he's coming yet, so I don't know if these scenes were in the wrong order. Karen, who apparently has the best ears in all of pop culture, overhears this from across the restaurant and yells about the party to the room at large, which seemed like it was going to turn into like, oh no, the party is too big, but that doesn't go anywhere.
So two sidebars. Very allegedly fancy restaurant appears to have a soup buffet.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand. And just a personal side note, I went to high school with Ian Khan, who plays Danny.
Oh!
Didn't really know him. He's a couple years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
His senior year, he played Sweeney in Sweeney Todd.
Oh, my God.
Very well, as I remember. Who knows? But so, yeah, he's been playing charming sociopaths since at least the age of 17, and good for him.
That's
and
a
I
great
had totally
note.
Forgotten he did this, and then he popped up, and I was like, oh, I know that guy, sort of.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Nice connection. Back to the Leary house, Dawson is still shuffling around alone. He finally works up the courage to pick up the phone, and in another blast from the past of the ones that you've been appreciating, he waits to hear a dial tone before he punches in the phone number, which, like, I don't remember the last time I did that. So he calls Joey. She's in her dorm room reading when her cell phone rings, and she catches it milliseconds before Dawson tries to hang up, having changed his mind. And they have a desperately polite and thus extremely awkward conversation. He apologizes for being so busy that it's taken him until now to return her call, which she lets him off the hook for. And then he tells her he thinks he's coming to town, but no, he doesn't need a place to stay. He'll probably just crash at Jack and Jen's, and why not? It's gigantic. They live in a mansion. They vaguely agree to touch base later, and then he hangs up, leaving Joey to look bereft into the commercial break.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details. Save big money at
Menards. Then we're at Dr. Weir's office, where Dawson lets himself into an empty waiting room. He notices a call box on a side table and hits the buzzer just twice, Jen. No one responds right away, so he has time to scan Dr. Weir's framed diplomas on the wall, uncomfortably cross his legs like he looks like his pants don't fit because they fit, because they're not 17 sizes too big. Yeah. And then he urgently races out. And then we're back to the dorm room. We find out Audrey was not exaggerating about her terrible mother, Kay, played by Brenda Strong. She is making Audrey weigh herself as Joey gets back. And after Audrey has made introductions, clip six.
Oh, you have such a cute little figure. Did you ever do any modeling?
No.
If you're wondering why I was standing on that scale, it's because crazy woman here thinks I've gained 10 pounds.
That's not what I said, Audrey. 5, maybe.
Mom, do you have any idea how long it's taken me to feel good about my body?
And there's no reason you shouldn't, sweetie. It's just the known fact that college freshmen tend to pack on the LBs. Joey, how old do I look to you?
Oh.
Excuse me?
Oh, I'm putting you on the spot. I understand this. Allow me to rephrase. Do I look more like Audrey's mother or Audrey's sister? Be honest.
Definitely Audrey's sister.
Exactly. And do you know why that is? Because I take excellent care of myself. Your body is your friend and should be treated as such.
Okay, just shoot me, please. Will you just shoot me right now?
Yipe.
Also, like, if you've read Busy Phillips' memoir, this is really true to her experience in Hollywood. But she also is playing it so well. She's so good in this scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's rough.
Also, to see this dynamic from the other side, tune into our episode on Stumble, because this sort of comes up with the Busy Phillips character, but being on the mom ? Side of the equation.
Yeah. On a lighter note, speaking of my own shitty dorm rooms, Audrey has a Tufts sticker on her bulletin board that we see in a couple shots in this.
Nice.
Which, you know, shout out, go Jumbos. But also, why? That's not the school they go to.
No.
It's a different Boston school. A real one. Doesn't make any sense.
But it is in Boston. I mean, yes. I assume it's like The Office having the Froggy 101 sticker. Like, we did 2 minutes of research to try to make this seem more authentic.
Yeah, or someone on staff is an alum or something.
Totally. So Kay invites Joey to dinner with them, which Joey politely declines, which forces Audrey to pull her into their, as you already said, adjoining bathroom and beg her to come with them. Joey says she's waiting for a call from Dawson, which is the worst excuse ever, since, as Audrey points out, and I already also did, Joey has a cell phone. Joey says she and Dawson have plans later, but Audrey says that's later, and Audrey needs her now. And then Dawson is letting himself in at Grams's house with an overnight bag and without having called first, apparently, never mind asked to crash, but Jen says, of course, he can stay. Jack comes bounding down the stairs just then, and after Jen has left without acknowledging him at all, Jack invites Dawson to come with him to hang out at the frat house. And even though Dawson had to leave the last party he went to after approximately 6 minutes, he decides to go to this one, which is apparently the right choice, because when we see them next, they are playing a drinking game and Dawson is apparently having the time of his life. Clip seven. The fratty laugh. Oh my God. Just more proof of what we always say, which is that Vanderbeek, it has always been better suited to like a fratty bully type than a sensitive, neurotic artiste, in my opinion.
Yeah, he plays drunk quite well in this, I think. Mm-hmm. I will give him that.
Yeah, there's more drunky to come. At dinner, Kay is still policing Audrey. Clip eight.
Is that a cream sauce?
It's a Dijon.
Oh, looks like cream. Have you been working out?
No, Mother. I hate working out. You know that.
Well, I walked 6 miles in the soft sand before getting on the plane this morning. My sciatic is killing me.
It's great, Mom.
You being sarcastic?
I was kidding.
Are you asking me or telling me? Because your voice goes up at the end like it's a question, but I have a sneaking suspicion you're not looking for an answer.
I think it's called up-talking.
I wasn't aware that's what I was doing.
Oh, you should be, because it makes you sound like a California blonde.
Excuse me, I have to make a phone call.
Thank God Audrey asked Joey to come to this hell dinner, because she's being a huge help. What a great friend. My God. So Joey goes to a quieter part of the restaurant and calls Dawson, who sees that it's her calling and sighs. And when Brady, the frat bro, calls Dawson back to the table for round two, Dawson just snaps his phone shut, ignoring her.
I do want to start a band just so I can name it Dawson StarTech.
Gorgeous. Later, Audrey tells Kay the school is doing a production of The Seagull and that she is thinking of auditioning. And this is how we find out Audrey had a career as a child actor that was successful enough for her to have been in a movie that Joey has been meaning to rent. Kay asks if Audrey misses her old job, which she doesn't. She can think of better ways to feel bad about herself. And Kay blows past that to say she misses it and tells Joey when she asks that she was a model and sometime actress in her day and that acting was her real dream. Clip 9.
You know, if you look closely, you can see her in an old A-Team episode.
Actually, I was up for a Scorsese movie when I found out I was pregnant with Audrey.
That's pretty much why she hates me. I ruined her career.
It's not true, dear. I wasn't very good. You were good.
I suck.
You do not, Audrey. You just lack focus. You know, acting requires a great deal of discipline, something you've never had.
That's not true, Mom.
Audrey, please. Since you were a little girl, flitting from one thing to the next, toys, boys, schools, do you have any idea how many private schools Audrey's been to in the last 4 years?
Mom, really? I don't think Joey wants to hear about this.
6 in 4 years, which must be some kind of record. Each one ending in lurid scandal.
Mom, please stop. You're embarrassing me.
Oh, I'm embarrassing you? I'm so sorry, Audrey, but I don't think you really know what it's like to be embarrassed. Not until you have to shell out a 6-figure donation to some hoity-toity New England college just so they'll even consider your daughter, whose academic record is the very definition of embarrassing.
Yikes!
Yikes. Also, she could have gone to Tufts. Like, why is she at Worthington?
Adam, you're an expert in this field. Does being an actor require discipline? Is that something that you have found most actors you know have?
I'm going to go with yes.
Okay.
I mean, and other things sure. Like talent and charisma, mm-hmm. but uniqueness, nerve. But I mean, yeah, like it's not untrue, but that's not the way to talk about it to your daughter.
No, especially since the Kay's own self-mythologizing goes from I was up for a Scorsese movie to I was not very good. Like, which is it?
Right.
You know, do you think that Audrey could book a part in a college production of The Seagull?
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. It's a college production.
That's true.
The bar is low.
True. This is roughly when Joey finally remembers she is not mute. Clip 10.
You know what, Mrs. Liddell?
Mm. Kay, please.
You know what, Kay? I've sat here this entire meal and listened to you do nothing but cut down your daughter. And I don't know if you're just upset with her because she's not what you want her to be or because she's 18 and you're not. Audrey may be dramatic, but at least she's never boring. And she may be interested in a lot of different things, but that just makes her well-rounded. And as far as discipline goes, she obviously has a great deal because no matter what you seem to say to her, she somehow manages to grin and bear it. As you can see, I don't really have that kind of discipline. Audrey, let's go. There's a party.
Brr. But it's finally.
Good. Yeah. It feels a little out of character, but I kind of loved it. She sold mm-hmm. it. She sold it.
Yeah. I think they're trying to show us that, I mean, they go back and forth with this too, but like Joey is finding her confidence in college, mm-hmm. but also maybe it's easier to just be a bitch to this woman she knows is leaving tomorrow.
Fair.
Over to the party where Pacey gives Audrey a bottle of water and talk about the nice boat being a chick magnet turns to Pacey telling Joey when she joins them that her roommate is hitting on him. Clip 11.
Am not.
You are too.
You wish.
Hey, I just call him like I see him, lady.
You better watch it because I might just have to put a hole in your boat later or something.
This is what
now
I realized.
We're calling it now.
seriously. But this is also where I realized one of the things that is most refreshing about Audrey is that she doesn't talk like all of the rest of them do all the time. Like, she seems like a person. And I wonder how much of that is just Busy Phillips being like, I can't deliver this. Can I say this instead? Which, if so, good instinct.
Yeah, and they're adorable together. I don't remember if it goes anywhere, but I'm into it.
I think it does.
Even just as friends. Like, yeah. I hope we see. It's a thing, like, the season is so weird and fractured, but the thing I like about it is we're getting these different pairings. Mm-hmm. Like, Jen and Pacey. In the next episode, Jen and Dawson have a scene I thought was really nice, and they sort of haven't been together since they were together, really. So that part's fun, even though none of it makes a lot of sense.
I agree with all of that, with the compliments and the critiques, for sure.
Yeah.
So Joey and Pacey confirm that neither of them has heard from Dawson, which is when he shows up with Jack, also doing fuckboy hands. You can see that in the visual aids. And like a dozen frat bros are with them, babbling drunkenly. Pacey pulls Jack aside to scold him for getting Dawson wasted when the purpose of this get-together full of randos was to make Dawson feel better sober. Jack thought the purpose was to make Dawson feel better, period, which he does. And then we go back to Dawson, who excitedly greets Joey and remembers that he was supposed to call her. And he uses some of his precious 2001 cell phone minutes on a bit, calling Joey while she is standing there in front of him. Clip 12.
Dawson, what's up with you, Nate?
Jack, I'm leaving you a message. Joey, hey, it's Dawson. I'm at this party here in Pacey's boat, and I wish you were here. You're not here. It sucks that you're not here. I was supposed to call you, and I'm so sorry I didn't call you. I meant to, and I was really going to be. You know what? I couldn't. I couldn't call you. Does that make any sense? Am I making sense, or am I just rambling on like a drunken idiot on your machine? I think that's what I'm doing. But that's okay, because you left me a drunken message, and if you hadn't, I probably would have gone back to L.A. You know what? I would probably still be there right now, and maybe my dad would still be alive. So, thank you, Joey. I appreciate it. Okay, call me. Bye.
So I had to leave in some of the long silence of Joy staring at him like, what the fuck? That's a reach.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is yikes. And also, like, no one knows that he was eating an ice cream cone in the car. So,
yeah,
you know, he was blaming himself a couple episodes ago. And no, Mitch is just a dumbass.
Mitch is just a dumbass. Let's not discount that. Comes up in the next episode, too. The next morning, Dawson is asleep on the deck of the boat when Pacey wakes him up with a short Tervis tumbler of hangover cure the guys at the restaurant swear by. Sauerkraut, juice, honey, and a splash of Tabasco. Adam, you are an imbiber. What are your thoughts on this hangover cure?
Gross. I would rather be hungover than... I think it's real. Like, I think it's one of the... I mean, I don't know if it's like real or, you know, old wives' tale real, but I think it is one of those things where, like, you know, something about the salt and the vinegar and the whatever, but no thank you.
One whiff of it is all Dawson needs to say he's not strong enough to drink it, so he's with you. And then clip 13.
Please tell me that how my head feels is no reflection on how I acted.
How your head feels is no reflection on how you acted.
You're not a very good liar.
Look, you obviously had a lot of stuff bottled up inside. You combine that with a couple of 12 beers, and it's bound to happen.
I'm afraid I said something really terrible to Joey.
Yeah, be afraid.
Oh, God.
Be very afraid. You put on quite a show last night. But if it's any consolation to you, I think Joey's going to forgive you a lot sooner than you forgive yourself.
Okay. I feel like these two haven't gotten back to their old vibe yet, which sort of makes dramatic sense, I guess, that they would still be enemies. But once you know that they did not get along offset, it's hard to know, like, how much is one and how much is the other, I guess.
Yeah. This felt real to me, and like that Pacey is the good guy here and is being sweet.
But not too sweet.
But also not sugarcoating. Because obviously off screen, Joey was like, you will not believe what Dawson just fucking said to me.
Yeah, seriously.
So
Pacey tries again with the sauerkraut juice before leaving for work. And then we're at the dorm. Kay and Audrey are hugging goodbye. Kay sniffling that she feels like she didn't get enough of Audrey, which is what happens when you fly across the whole country to see your child for like 18 hours. Like she said,
is it even a weekend?
No, it's the next day. She said she had been walking in the sand before she got her flight.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Audrey has class, I assume.
Oh, I assume this was... Oh, is it the weekend? Yes, I assume it's a Sunday.
Yeah, okay, that would make sense.
I doubt this woman works. I don't think she has a job.
No, but I meant Audrey would have things to do. You know.
Yeah. Kay says this, clip 14.
I just want you to know that the only reason I say some of the things I say to you is out of love. Do you know how much I love you? Bunches.
That's nice, Mom. But you know what was missing from that speech? An apology to me.
Could just say an apology. No one else is here. But also, I'm shitty to you because I love you so much is like, well, that's what abusers say. So yeah. I guess that makes sense. When Audrey adds that they shouldn't do this anymore, Kay is alarmed, thinking she means she doesn't want Kay to visit again. But Audrey just means they should try to be good to each other. Clip 15.
Because I know I might be a spoiled brat, but quite frankly, I'm the only one you've got. And you may be a raging psychotic, but you're my raging psychotic. You know what I mean? I'm sorry, Audrey. Me too, Mom. Okay.
Why are there so many catchphrases in this one scene with this actress? I don't think we see again, or at least not for a while. Like, how much do you love me? Bunches, and then the honey bunny thing. It's like this is a lot for a brand new character. That was nice, I thought.
Yeah,
and her outfit was perfect for mother who borrows daughter's clothes and hits on her boyfriends. It's like a leopard print cardigan with a faux fur collar. It's, you know.
Yeah, and she's so good. I mean, she's so perfectly cast. Like,
yes,
you believe in them instantly.
Mm-hmm. Completely. So Audrey returns to the room to tell Joey that Kay has gone and to thank Joey for defending her honor and inviting her to a party, saving her from having to invite herself like she usually does. Audrey appreciates Joey making Audrey feel good about herself and hopes that all the shitty things Kay said about her didn't make Joey think less of her, which Joey says they didn't. She's just glad she could help. Eventually, that's me, not her. Audrey wishes she could return the favor. And then Dawson is staggering back to Graham's house. He finds Jen eating a gigantic breakfast of heavy comfort food and guesses it's because of Charlie. She stops him saying Charlie's name and changes the subject to Dawson's fratty night, saying she can't believe he had fun with guys who are that into high fives. Dawson mumbles that the last time he was in town, everyone was walking on eggshells around him, which just reminded him of everything. Jen tells him that even though his life sucks in ways she can't imagine, everyone is just trying their best. And he mopily agrees that he's a lucky guy with kick-ass friends. This also is the scene where he puts his head in the dish. So he's experienced a range of emotions here. And then Pacey is doing prep in the restaurant kitchen when Karen drags her ass in. Clip 16.
Yeah, I'm over.
Overworked.
I thought you had a date with your boyfriend last night.
So did I. But something came up and you're short a waiter, so. How was your party?
Yeah. Not as good as it would have been if you were there.
Well, I'll be sure not to miss the next one then. What's wrong?
Nothing. I was just noticing that necklace. It's nice.
Oh, thanks.
Is it new?
No, it's my grandmother's. You know, passed down through generations. I thought I lost it the other night. My mother would not have been pleased.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Anyway. I better start setting up before I pass out. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Well, he's not, because the long pause and his clocking the necklace was him realizing that's the locket from the boat and that Danny was not there with his wife. He was there with Karen.
Bomb, bomb.
Dun, dun, dun. And then, after a very self-conscious fall 2001 shot of the American flag... Joey and her sweater-on-sweater look are walking Dawson to the bus or train station, unclear. They love to say train, but I think we know it's a bus. And I guess he forgot he has a car. But anyway, Dawson says he has spent the past 20 minutes trying to figure out how to apologize to her. But Joey says their relationship has moved past the need for formal apologies. And also, he was such a jerk that she assumes he's already feeling terrible, which he confirms. She changes the subject to the second run movie she had told him about, which is Across the Street. He can't remember the last time he just went to a movie. Joey says they should go whenever he comes back, as long as he's prepared for the torn seats and ancient burnt popcorn smell. And Dawson mopes that you would think seeing a movie and losing himself in someone else's world would appeal to him right now, but it doesn't. And then there's more pointed patriotism. A random troop is just like standing outside the station. It's so random. I had to watch it several times to make sure, like, okay, he does have like medals and stuff on his chest and he's not just a bus driver, but he's not. Anyway.
Do you think they were on location and it was just a guy?
Maybe.
Like it was a real, right? Because that would have been at this time. Yeah. Right? Transit places would have been crawling with troops and cops.
I guess, but this guy is like, he has gray hair. Like he's not to guard the station.
And if anything, it's like the Wilmington bus station. It's not like a big hub.
Right. Anyway, Dawson doesn't know what to do with himself. With Joey says it's okay for someone who has just lost a parent. And once they get inside, Dawson admits that he came to see a therapist and flaked. Joey asks why, and he says he doesn't know instead of what seems obvious, which is he was scared. But they go on. Clip 17.
Can I tell you something? Even if it has the potential to make you sad. Joey, when I made the decision not to go back to L.A., all I could do was daydream about this one thing. Kissing you. I was so looking forward to this day when it would finally feel right for you and me to give it another try, you know? And for the first time in forever, it seemed so possible. It seemed like it was just around the corner. And then he died. And it just went away. I was living in this fuzzy world of daydreams, and I just got yanked out of it. And I have no idea how to get back there. And what scares me most is that maybe I never will.
I hate the way this show conflates the idea of like daydreaming and dissociating from your own life is like the same as creativity. And like this is supposed to indicate that he's lost his muse or something. Where it's like, no, people can make up stories about things that didn't happen to them and often do. Like just because Kevin Williamson is constantly mining his own life for material doesn't mean that's the only way that Dawson could like make another film.
Yeah. And again, like he had a really shitty experience.
Yeah.
Like his dream came true. He got a job on a film set and it was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't mean he should stop. Doesn't mean the law will be awful. But right. Apparently no one has told him that. And
yeah.
But like that's real. That's a thing that happens to 18-year-olds. It's utterly fair for him to feel this way and not conflate it with like, I was just dreaming.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's when stupid Joey leans in and gives him the driest kiss we have ever seen on the show. Seriously, like sibling level chemistry between the two of them.
Oh, I thought she kind of sold it, but he did not.
Yeah, well, he's the one who's supposed to be troubled, I guess. But anyway.
Yeah, right. Like she's trying and he is not into it.
He's shut down. Yeah. And she says this, our final clip.
You'll find your way back. In the meantime, the daydream for the both of us.
Do an ADR on that? No? Okay, I guess that's fine. Anyway, both of you shut up. Go get on your train or bus. That's the end of the episode. Any final remarks?
Nah.
Okay, got that.
I think we covered it.
Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP. Audrey?
Yeah, I was going to give it to Joey, both for standing up to Audrey's mom and for not shoving Dawson into the bay when he said that.
That's true. Yeah, Audrey for actually telling her mother almost in the moment to fuck off, which none of the characters on this show usually ever do. Least valuable player. Danny, the guy who's cheating on his wife. Sorry to your former classmate.
That's fine. We barely knew each other. I'm going to say, Jack, take care of your boy.
Yeah.
He got way too drunk way too fast.
He really did.
It's his first frat party.
Probably not the last. Next time, Dawson actually makes it to his appointment with a therapist played by Polly Perrette, of all people. Joey starts the archiving project with Professor Wilder while Audrey kicks off a project of her own, getting onto the real world Ibiza. And Pacey gets annoyed when Karen and Danny start being real obvious about their affair. It should be obvious to you by now, but our visual aids are a real value add to our coverage. You can find those and lots more, including details on the membership campaign still in progress. Trust me, you want these stickers at againwiththispodcast.com. That's also our handle on Blue Sky, so follow us there. I am Tara Ariano. I have been here with Adam Grossworth while he waits to get called for his audition for The Seagull. Adam, where can the listener find more of you?
I am on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Letterboxd at Adam807. And my podcast is at Muppeturgy.com and anywhere you get podcasts.
We'll link that in the show notes. Thank you to the absent Sarah D. Bunting and to our producer, David T. Cole, a lucky guy with kick-ass friends. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next time. Over to the party. Pacey gives Audrey a bottle of water and they chat about the nice boat being a chick maggot. Nope. Over to the party. Sorry.
Both things can be true.